Hello, and welcome to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Sackville, New Brunswick, the heart of the Maritimes, on the traditional and unceded lands of the Mi'kmaq people. I'm Erica Butler. It's Friday, September 17th. Coming up on today's show, we'll bring you a few highlights from the Federal Candidates Forum, held last night at Sackville Town Hall, hosted by the Mount Allison Students' Union. Also, Mountie football is back on Saturday. Elections Canada has the info you need to vote on Monday. And Saturday is Neighbor Day in Memramcook Tantramar. We find out what that exactly means. But first, the fourth wave of COVID-19 has come to Sackville. Mike Keating, interim director of the New Brunswick Association of Nursing Homes, confirmed that 5 cases have been diagnosed so far this week at the Drew Nursing Home. The first case was found in an employee earlier this week and prompted 2 rounds of mandatory testing for residents and staff so far. The first round yielded all negative results, says Keating, but the second round, conducted Wednesday, found 2 positive cases in residents of the home. 2 more cases were diagnosed on Thursday in employees. Keating says the 2 residents are suffering mild symptoms at this time, but also that they are compromised people having to live in a nursing home. The Drew has put in pandemic protocols and restrictions until they get the situation under control, says Keating. Testing will continue for residents and employees until there's no longer a risk. The Drew is currently locked down with no visitors allowed and PPE protocols are in place. Keating says that will continue until the home is satisfied that the risk is gone. A fire damaged a home in Westcock early Thursday morning. The Sackville Fire Department Deputy Chief Mike Green says the volunteers knocked down the fire quickly and the house is still standing. Green says the owner was checked over by Ambulance New Brunswick and noted no significant injuries. The RCMP attended the scene but deemed the fire not suspicious. The Red Cross have been in contact with the homeowner, Kevin Brown, and Brown's neighbors have started an effort to collect donations to help him through the aftermath of the fire. Cheryl Ward has posted information on the Westcock Community Concerns Facebook group. Ward says Brown doesn't yet know what he can salvage from his home, and he is temporarily displaced. University football is back. This Saturday at 2 p.m., the Mounties will take on the Acadia Axemen on Alumni Field in Sackville. The Mounties missed the complete season last year after Atlantic University Sport called it off due to the pandemic. Last week, the Mounties played an exhibition game against St. Mary's University, with SMU coming out on top 26-6. Saturday's game is not only the official season opener, but also the team's annual homecoming game. Last night, 4 candidates for the federal seat of Beauséjour gathered at Town Hall in a forum organized by the Mount Allison Students' Union. 2 candidates were excluded from the proceedings, Jack Miner for the People's Party of Canada and Isabelle Chiasson for the Free Party. That's because Massu decided to apply rules developed by the Leaders' Debate Commission, which excludes parties with no seats or less than 4% of the popular vote. To find out more about the excluded candidates, as well as the NDP and Conservative candidates running in Beauséjour, check out worktimes.com. The 4 candidates on stage who did attend were the NDP's Evelyn Godfrey, Liberal Dominic LeBlanc, Green Party candidate Stella Anna Girouard, and Shelley Mitchell from the PC Party. There was no debate and no back and forth. Rather, the night was designed to get at what the candidates believe and where their parties stand on a number of issues. Moderator Dr. Mario Levesque kicked off the proceedings with a question about COVID-19 recovery, and Green candidate Anna Girouard responded with a surprising take.
Yes, I do think that fresh air is the best cure for COVID-19. It cleans the lungs and the whole respiratory system, and we need that. I don't believe that children should have the needle.
Girouard's answers for the rest of the forum were sometimes hard to follow and often off topic. The candidate didn't refer to the Green Party platform, but twice mentioned a book she authored called The Birch Without Pants. In a riding where the Greens garnered 14,000 votes for candidate Laura Rainsborough in 2019, the federal Greens' selection of Girouard as a candidate is puzzling and a possible sign that the national Greens are simply not paying attention in Beauséjour. NDP candidate Evelyn Godfrey and Conservative Shelley Mitchell were more faithful to their national party platforms. Godfrey said it wasn't hard for her.
Yeah, so I'm in the very fortunate position of being a dedicated socialist and the only socialist candidate standing in this election. So my principles are entirely in line with the principles of the New Democratic Party.
Godfrey said she supports a universal basic income, investment in healthcare, and green energy investment, and opposes continued extraction of fossil fuels. Shelley Mitchell touched on conservative platform items like the plan for a low-carbon savings account and spoke against a carbon tax. Mitchell mentioned driving through Sackville and Dorchester and noticing shuttered businesses.
We need to get control of our economy that's spiraling downwards. So we need to stimulate the economy safely, of course, with COVID measures in mind. But we need to look towards getting businesses back on track. We need to provide them with the resources as well as the manpower.
The incumbent for Beauséjour is Dominic LeBlanc, who has held the seat for the past 20 years. Nearly 25,000 people voted for LeBlanc in 2019, at a time when he was unable to campaign as he was in hospital for cancer treatment. It's widely assumed that the riding is a sure thing for LeBlanc and the Liberals. After the forum, I asked LeBlanc what he's done to show Beauséjour residents he has their interests in mind.
So I've never accepted that a riding is a sure thing. I would never presume to judge how voters will vote in each individual election. Every election where I've been lucky enough to be a candidate, I've worked very hard. I've tried to meet as many people as I can. It's obviously a bit more difficult in the context of COVID. The fact that we're talking to each other wearing these masks tells us it's a different election and a different time. But I think every mandate that I've been fortunate enough to earn, I've earned it during the campaign, but also from the work that I've tried to do as a member of parliament.
For more on the candidates, check chmafm.com later today. Once you've figured out which candidate will get your vote, you just need to actually vote. To help make sure you're prepared, here's Elections Canada spokesperson Françoise Engehard. So Election Day is Monday. And for those of us who haven't voted yet, what do electors need to know to be ready to vote?
Well, you need to know where to go and vote, and then you need to know what IDs you're going to have to show. To find out where to go and vote, you should have received, the vast majority of people have received a voter information card. And really, that voter information card tells you absolutely everything you know you need to know about voting. It tells you, it told you where to go on advance polls. But if you haven't voted by advance polls, then you need to go where you need to go on election day, whether that building is accessible or not. There is all sorts of information you are going to get there. So you will have where you should go, the location, and inside that location, what polling station you must go to. And basically, that is it. Once you have that, you know where to go.
And the best thing is for people with a voter information card to bring it along with them when they vote?
Absolutely, because it can be used as a proof of address. Okay, it is not a proof of identity, but it shows where you live. You also need to prove you are who you say you are. So a driver's license will do the trick nicely, because like any other card issued by federal, provincial, local governments, it has your photo, your name, and your current address. So you can basically prove who you are and where you live just with that ID. Otherwise, you show your voter information card and a bank statement, or, you know, something, that utility bill, a student ID card, and that's fine. And you can vote without any difficulty.
Right. So if you've recently moved, you just need to find some other pieces of sort of address identifying documents, such as bills and that sort
of
thing.
Yes. Well, if you've moved, it is possible then that you have to update your information on the register. Okay, or be put in, you know, some people also 18 or who just turned 18 need to be put on the register. So if you haven't done that already, you can do that at the poll as well. And you need to show again who you are and where you live now. And you can make and you can change your voter information on the register at the polling station. It's going to take a little bit longer maybe, but it is possible.
Right. And so for those people, they might not have a voter information card, then they can go on the Elections Canada website and find out which polling station they need to go to. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. They enter their postal code and it will tell them what polling location and what polling station within that location, the desk they should go to vote. I should also point out that at all the locations, we will have people there to direct traffic, tell people where they should go to make sure that all the health measures are adhered to, you know, the social distancing and so on and so forth. So, you know, all of they will be helped. They will not be left alone when they go into the polling location. There will be people directing electors to where they should go.
All right. Now, I know that in the provincial election we had in New Brunswick last year, the number of people voting in advance polls actually was a lot higher than it had been in previous years, I think probably because of COVID-19 and that sort of thing. Were advance polls busier than usual for this election in your experience?
Yes. Basically, nationally and everywhere, the numbers have been going up steadily for the past few elections, I can tell you. And basically, it was no exception in our region. Nationally, 5,780,000 people already voted by advance poll this election. It's more than 2019 and more than 2015. It's up roughly 18.5% from the last election. And we're not surprised because we have seen that trend since, you know, advance polls have become possible in Canada. Just as an example, for the 40th election, this one is the 44th, for the 40th election, 1.5 million people roughly voted by advance poll as opposed to 5,780,000 this time. So it is quite a steady increase all across the board. And surely it's the pandemic, but it's also the ease of going before the rush and also the possibility to not be in your riding, for the election day itself.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, best of luck, Françoise, for Election Day. And thanks for taking the time to share that info with us today.
Thank you very much.
Voters in the neighboring riding of Cumberland-Colchester won't have an NDP choice on their ballot when they go to the polls on Monday. Up until Wednesday, 18-year-old Dan Osborne of Amherst was running in the riding, but after a questionable tweet from 2019 surfaced on social media, Osborne resigned his candidacy, leaving the NDP without a candidate in the Nova Scotia riding. When Osborne was 16 years old, he tweeted at Oprah, asking the question, "Was Auschwitz a real place?" That tweet surfaced this week, and Osborne apologized from his current Twitter account, saying he couldn't recall posting the tweet and that the role of Auschwitz and the history of the Holocaust is one we should never forget. Osborne's resignation came on the same day that another NDP candidate running in Toronto St. Paul's resigned over a series of tweets deemed anti-Semitic. Last but not least on today's Tantramar Report, the Memramcook Tantramar Task Force wants you to get neighborly this Saturday. I called up organizer Kate Doyle to find out more. Kate Doyle, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you're one of the organizers behind Memramcook Tantramar Neighbor Day. Give us an idea of what that's all about.
Definitely. So a group of us that are involved with the Memramcook Tantramar Community Task Force, we're kind of talking about what a long, almost 2 years it's been, and how we've kind of not had those natural opportunities to connect with the people around us. And we also knew that when the pandemic kind of set in, people in this area were fantastic to each other. They were really quickly like, how do I get you food? Do you need me to drop off something? Can I call you once a week? Those types of things. And so we wanted to put together something that kind of encouraged that that celebration or reconnection of people. So the people around you, the people that made the past 2 years maybe a little bit easier to get through. we've had a really kind of isolating time, and we haven't had the chance to kind of do a ton of real celebration. And so we wanted to put together something that kind of gave people that opportunity to do it in whatever way works for them. No stress, no obligation. It could be, you know, if we had tighter lockdown measures, it could be shifted a little bit to do it that way. We just wanted to give people permission or an opportunity to celebrate and connect with each other.
All right. And so it's wide open, but you're hoping that people will sort of share what they choose to do with Neighbor Day so that we can sort of all see what's happening.
Yeah, definitely. I think social media is one of those like really great or really terrible things, right? So this is a chance for us to use it for some good. I think it's the first and foremost and most important part is doing the thing. So doing whatever connection you want to do with your neighbor. So it could be something big. It could be something small. It could be, you know, a hello, a wave, taking a selfie together, that type of thing. If you want to post it, awesome. I think that that's a really great way to kind of show that you're connecting with the people around you and to encourage other people to do the same thing.
Okay. And you've put in a toolkit. You've put together a toolkit to help people sort of come up with ideas or what's in that toolkit and where can people find it?
So we scoured the internet. There's a few other communities who do a version of Neighbor Day. And so we came together and we said, okay, in Memrancook Tantramar, what might this look like? And so we talked about things that we would want to do with our friends and our family. So, you know, one of the fellows who helped with the planning talked about, like, you know, going and knocking on his neighbor's door and talking about the gardening that they both do. One of the students from Mount A talked about a scavenger hunt. She put it together. It's in the toolkit. And it's fantastic. And so sometimes it's kind of hard to say, like, okay, it's Neighbor Day. What am I going to do? Oh, gosh, I don't know. What does that even mean? So we wanted to give people some ideas, kind of a launch pad, if you will, so they could look at it and they could say, oh, yeah, I could do that. Or like, oh, you know what? I'm baking bread. Maybe I'll bake a second one for my neighbor, that type of thing, just to kind of give people an idea of what they might like to do. But again, if you have a better idea or if you have something that really speaks to you, do that. It doesn't have to be in the toolkit. It can be whatever you envision as a way to celebrate and connect with your neighbor. So the toolkit's available online. We have a Facebook event. The easiest way to probably find it is if you're on Facebook, you search Memrancook Tantramar Community Task Force. It's under the events tab there. And so we've got some posts, and we also have a link to the full toolkit. And then out in the community, we have some print versions. And so those print versions are meant for people who maybe aren't online as often. We recognize that, you know, not everyone spends all day on Facebook, that's for sure. So there's some, we sent some out to Dorchester and Port Elgin at the school and the library. And Memrancook, they're at the town hall and the library.
Well, Kate, thanks for telling us about this. And yeah, happy Neighbor Day. We should also mention it's, you know, it's happening this Saturday.
Yes, it is. So it's happening Saturday, September 18th. Happy Neighbor Day to you as well. You know, you can do something nice to your neighbor any day of the year. We thought that kind of adding a stamp to it or a day might encourage people to say, like, okay, I'm putting this on the calendar. I'm going to do it this Saturday. Again, doesn't have to be a big, elaborate thing if that's not your jam. It can be something as simple as, you know, we've got a little connection card in the toolkit. You can fill that out and drop it off to your neighbor to say, hey, thanks for being awesome.
I love it.
Cool.
Thanks, Kate.
Thank you.
Appreciate you taking the time.
Of course, no problem. Thank you.
That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Friday, September 17th. Next week, you might notice some changes with Tantramar Report. We will be shifting slightly, coming to your airwaves on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at the usual times, 9 a.m., noon, and 4 p.m. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we'll be relying on our daily top-of-the-hour news spots to bring you timely local information and headlines. We hope this new schedule will allow us to continue improving Tantramar Report, bringing you local voices and local stories from your region. And as always, we hope that you will get in touch with your comments or questions at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.